Public hearing to consider adoption of order number R1-216-002, general waste discharge requirements, WDRs, and order number R1-216-003, conditional waiver of waste discharge requirements for wine, beverage, and food processor waste to land and associated mitigated negative declarations. I did want to make an announcement for lunch. We're going to order pizza. And the reward to board members is if we get done before 12, we have to give due consideration everything, is then you can take pizza on the road with you going home early. I hope we just stick down to business. Hearing procedure. Opening statements. This is the time and place for a hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider adoption of order number R1-2016-0002, general waste discharge requirements, WDRs, and order number R1-2016-0003, conditional waiver of waste discharge requirements for wine, beverage, and food processor waste to land and associated mitigated declaration. For clarity purposes, we're going to want two motions. One for the waste discharge requirement, and then a second motion for the conditional waiver. This item has been properly noticed. Is there anyone in the audience who wants to challenge whether it was properly noticed? Okay, hearing none, I deem that it has been. Will all those who expect to give testimony in this matter please stand, raise your right hand, and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that you will tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
And then it is helpful to us for record keeping if when you testify, you say you've already been sworn, and that would be appreciated. Timelines for presentation are as follows. Staff, 20 minutes. Industry representatives, 20 minutes. And interested members of the public, 3 minutes each. Does anyone challenge those time allocations? Okay, the record should reflect no one challenged them. At this time, we'll start with the staff presentation.
Good morning, Chairman Corbett and members of the board. I am Rachel Pratt, here this morning to provide an overview of the item before you for consideration, general waste discharge requirements and a general conditional waiver of waste discharge requirements for discharges of wine, beverage, and food processor waste to land. Throughout this presentation, I will be using the terms general order and conditional waiver when referencing the wine, beverage, and food processing general waste discharge requirements order and the wine, beverage, and food processor conditional waiver. I will begin my presentation today by providing you with some background information on our region's permitting of discharges of wine, beverage, and food processor waste to land. I will explain how the proposed general order and the conditional waiver may be used to authorize discharges of waste from processing facilities. I will provide you with an overview of the requirements of the general order and the conditional waiver and will point out the notable differences between these permits and the 2002 winery permit. I will describe the outreach actions taken by your staff when developing the general order and the conditional waiver. I will then discuss some of the significant comments received on the general order and provide you with staff's responses to these comments. I will end the presentation by summarizing the need for the general order and conditional waiver and provide you with staff's recommendations. Excuse me. There are approximately 400 wine, beverage, and food processing facilities located in the North Coast region that discharge processed wastewater and processed solids to land. Currently, 84 of these facilities discharge their waste under coverage of a Regional Water Board permit. The remaining 300-plus facilities are unpermitted. As identified in the blue, red, and green sections of the pie chart, the 84 permitted facilities are authorized to discharge through one of three permitting mechanisms, either individual waste discharge requirements, enrollment under the 2002 winery order, or enrollment under the 2012 categorical waiver. The 2002 winery order is a general waste discharge requirements order for winery waste discharges to land. The 2012 categorical waiver waives the need for waste discharge requirements for certain categories of low-threat discharges, including discharges from non-commercial wineries producing less than 200 gallons of wine a year. The proposed general order and proposed conditional waiver are intended to update and replace the 2002 winery order. Current enrollees in the 2002 winery order will be required to apply for coverage under the general order or the conditional waiver. It is expected that the majority of the approximately 320 unpermitted processing facilities will be eligible for coverage under the general order or the conditional waiver. Dischargers with individual waste discharge requirements have the option of applying for coverage under the general order or the conditional waiver at their discretion. As stated earlier, the proposed general order and conditional waiver are intended to update and replace the 2002 winery order. The general order and conditional waiver will extend permit coverage beyond wineries and allow other eligible types of beverage and food processors to seek authorization to discharge under a streamlined permitting process. The types of wine, beverage, and food processing facilities eligible to apply for coverage under the general order are listed here on this slide. The conditional waiver is expected to cover approximately 70 to 80% of the wine, beverage, and food processing waste dischargers in the North Coast region. In the next slide, I will identify the processing facilities that are eligible to apply for conditional waiver coverage. The conditional waiver authorizes discharges to land of processed wastewater and the reuse of processed solids as a soil amendment on site. It does not require effluent or groundwater monitoring. Dischargers covered by the conditional waiver are required to report annually the production volume of the facility, the volume of disposed wastewater, the volume of processed solids generated and reused on site, and a compliance assessment of that year's discharge. This flowchart provides a simplified overview of the processing facilities that are eligible to apply for coverage under the conditional waiver. It begins at the green box. It's hard to see the green. Oops, where's the button? Now I can't find the button. Green. Any eligible type of wine, beverage, or food processing facility that produces a monthly average volume of processed wastewater of 1,500 gallons per day or less and discharges the processed waste to land is eligible to apply for coverage under the conditional waiver. If the facility produces more than 1,500 gallons per day threshold, then the facility is generally ineligible to apply for conditional waiver coverage. These facilities should instead apply for coverage under the general order or individual waste discharge requirements. The exception to the 1,500 gallon per day threshold, as identified in the blue box of this flowchart, only applies to wineries. A winery that produces a monthly average volume of processed wastewater of 3,000 gallons per day or less and produces no more than 5 gallons of wastewater for every gallon of wine produced is eligible to apply for coverage under the conditional waiver. The intent of this exception is to incentivize water conservation practices at wineries. Water conservation not only helps conserve a resource, but also results in a smaller volume of waste being discharged to land. Wineries that do not achieve the 5-to-1 wastewater to wine ratio and exceed the 1,500 gallon per day volume threshold are ineligible to apply for coverage under the conditional waiver. These wineries would need to apply for coverage under the general order or individual waste discharge requirements. Excuse me. The general order will likely cover the remaining 20 to 30% of eligible wine, beverage, and food processing dischargers. It will cover those processing facilities producing larger volumes of waste for treatment and disposal. The general order authorizes discharges to land of processed wastewater and the reuse of processed solids as a soil amendment on site. It requires most dischargers to implement effluent or groundwater monitoring. Larger waste-generating dischargers may be required to monitor effluent and groundwater. I will identify those facilities later in my presentation. When treated wastewater effluent is applied to land for the purpose of reuse or disposal, effluent monitoring is required to confirm effluent limitations are being met. when untreated or partially treated wastewater is applied to land for the purpose of treatment, such as discharges to spreading basins or septic tank systems, groundwater monitoring is required to confirm that the groundwater limitations are not being exceeded. The general order requires discharges of treated effluent to either meet the nutrient effluent limits of the general order or apply nutrients at or below the agronomic rate of the vegetation grown in the discharge area. Dischargers covered by the general order are required to report wastewater and solids disposal volume and effluent or groundwater monitoring data twice a year. The annual process and production volume of the facility, the annual chemical usage, and an annual summary of how the treatment and disposal system functioned the previous year is reported once a year. This chart provides an overview of the requirements of the general order for certain types of wastewater treatment and disposal systems. At the top of the chart, the two initial categories of wastewater discharge are identified there and there as partially or untreated wastewater to a below ground or at grade land treatment and disposal system, or discharges of treated wastewater above ground for reuse or disposal. Following these initial discharge categories are generalized overviews of the requirements for that type of wastewater discharge. As you can see in the gray, blue, and pink boxes, blue, pink, there are three possible subgroups or tracks and requirements for discharges of treated wastewater above ground. The next few slides of my presentation will focus on each independent discharge category and the subgroup or track. A more detailed and complete version of the chart can be found as Attachment B to the Response to Comments document in your agenda package. All types of wastewater discharge covered by the general order are required to comply with the groundwater limitations of the general order. Demonstration of compliance with the groundwater limitations is achieved in various ways depending on the type of discharge. As stated earlier in the presentation, the general order requirements will differ based on the type of wastewater discharge. Discharges of partially or untreated process wastewater to a below-ground septic tank leach field system or an at-grade spreading basin have different requirements than those for discharges of treated process wastewater above ground for reuse or disposal. The reason for this difference in requirements is to allow the use of a properly designed and operated land treatment system that relies on the soil matrix to treat the discharge of partially or untreated wastewater. Such systems do not allow for the collection and monitoring of the treated effluent. Additionally, the reuse of processed solids on site as a soil amendment requires the submittal of a facility-specific nutrient management plan to demonstrate that the reuse will not cause agronomic rates to be exceeded. This requirement applies to all dischargers covered by the general order and is not dependent on the type of wastewater discharged. This requirement will be noted in the following slides that focus on a particular subgroup or track. However, as this requirement applies to all dischargers covered under the general order, I will not focus on it in future slides. So, to begin with, this discharges of partially treated or untreated process wastewater below ground or at grade for land treatment and disposal must demonstrate compliance with the groundwater limitations through groundwater monitoring. This applies to septic tank leach field systems, spreading basins, and overland flow treatment systems that rely on the soil matrix to treat the partially or untreated wastewater. The general order allows such dischargers up to a year from the issuance of the notice of coverage letter to implement a groundwater monitoring program. This extended time frame for compliance will allow the discharger time to budget for and hire a well driller to install groundwater monitoring wells. Groundwater is then required to be monitored and sampled 4 times a year. Excuse me. The next 3 slides will provide an overview of the requirements in the general order for discharges of treated wastewater above ground for reuse or disposal. As identified earlier, there are 3 subgroups or tracks for discharges of treated wastewater above ground. The track a specific discharger will be required to follow is identified during the application process. This is when the discharger provides the water board with a characterization of the wastewater being discharged and the treatment and disposal process being implemented. I will discuss each individual track in the next few slides, beginning with track A. Again, the next three tracks focus on discharges of treated wastewater above ground for reuse or disposal. Track A dischargers are required to demonstrate compliance with groundwater limitations through effluent monitoring. The effluent limits of the general order are intended to be protective of the beneficial uses of groundwater and the water quality objectives for groundwater as identified in the basin plan. This track applies to dischargers that demonstrate during the application process the ability of the treatment system to comply with all effluent limits. These dischargers will be required to conduct monthly effluent monitoring. By meeting the treated process effluent limits, the discharger will be demonstrating compliance with the general order's effluent limits and groundwater limits. Dischargers that document during the application process both their inability to meet the effluent limits for ammonia, nitrite, and nitrate, and their ability to apply nutrient-impacted wastewater at concentrations not exceeding the agronomic rate of the vegetation would fall under Track B. The majority of Track B dischargers will then demonstrate their compliance with groundwater limitations through effluent monitoring and submittal of a facility-specific nutrient management plan. Effluent is to be monitored on a monthly basis. Additionally, the discharge of nutrient-impacted treated wastewater must be at or below the agronomic rate in accordance with a facility-specific nutrient management plan. Certain Track B dischargers, those producing a monthly average of 10,000 gallons per day or more of processed wastewater, are required to do both the effluent and groundwater monitoring. The groundwater monitoring required from these dischargers is intended to demonstrate that agronomic rate application of nutrients is protective of groundwater limitations. If during the application process, a discharger demonstrates their inability to meet the requirements of Track A or B, then the discharger would be ineligible for coverage under the general order. These dischargers would then fall under Track C, what could be described as an interim step of the enrollment process. Track C applies to dischargers who have demonstrated during the application process an inability to meet either treated processed wastewater effluent limitations for sodium, chloride, pH, or BOD, groundwater limitations, or other general order requirements, such as discharge prohibitions or design and discharge specifications. These dischargers have two options: either apply for coverage under individual waste discharge requirements or make appropriate modifications to the treatment and disposal system so that the discharge meets the general order's requirements. And this is to take place no later than 6 months after the date of order adoption. Excuse me. This table identifies the major permit differences between the 2002 winery order, the conditional waiver, and the general order. The blue column on the left lists the evaluated parameter, such as facility type or reporting frequency. And across the top of the table in the gray section, each of the permits is listed: the 2002 winery order, proposed conditional waiver, and proposed general order. The first row describes the type of processing facility covered by each permit. The 2002 winery order required all commercial wineries to apply for coverage. The proposed conditional waiver and proposed general order are available to wineries, breweries, cider houses, non-alcoholic beverage producers, distilleries, post-slaughter cut-and-wrap meat processing facilities, fruit and vegetable processors, and dairy product manufacturers that are seeking Regional Water Board authorization to discharge their waste to land. However, not all wine, beverage, and food processor waste discharges to land need to be authorized by the general order or the conditional waiver. Some dischargers may be more appropriately regulated by individual waste discharge requirements. As documented in the first and second row, the 2002 winery order required all commercial wineries to seek enrollment under it. A commercial winery included any operation producing 200 gallons of wine a year. eligibility was based on annual wine production volume and included both small and large volume waste generating dischargers. While smaller volume waste generators were required to apply for coverage under the 2002 wine reorder, most of these facilities were deferred enrollment due to their low flow or their low volume of discharge and limited potential threat to groundwater quality. These facilities were asked to reapply for coverage under a winery waiver once it was developed and adopted by the Regional Water Board sometime in the future. The proposed conditional waiver in conjunction with the proposed general order allows for a tiered process of regulating dischargers from small and large volume waste generating dischargers. The most restrictive general order requirements apply to the larger volume waste generators. Like the 2002 winery order, the proposed general order requires the monitoring of treated wastewater effluent on a monthly basis. The 2002 winery order allows coverage for discharges from septic tank leach field systems, but does not require groundwater monitoring to confirm that groundwater limitations are not being exceeded. The proposed general order requires groundwater monitoring for subsurface and at-grade land treatment systems relying on soil treatment. The 2002 winery order requires the quarterly reporting of self-monitoring activities. The proposed conditional waiver requires annual reporting, and the proposed general order requires semi-annual reporting. The lower frequency reporting requirements of the conditional waiver and general order may result in a cost savings for those dischargers currently enrolled under the 2002 winery order. The 2002 winery order does not address nutrients or salinity as constituents of concern in processed waste. The proposed conditional waiver addresses nutrients by requiring that the land application of waste not exceed the agronomic rate of vegetation being grown. The proposed general order addresses nutrients and salinity through effluent limitations, agronomic rate applications of waste, and the meeting of groundwater limitations. In addition to the conditional waiver and general order, two mitigated negative declarations are being proposed for your consideration. One is for the general order and one for the conditional waiver. The mitigated negative declarations and associated initial studies and environmental checklists were prepared by your staff to satisfy the requirements of the California Environmental Quality Act by providing public agencies and the general public with information on the proposed adoption of the general order and conditional waiver and evaluating the reasonably foreseeable environmental impacts from their adoption. Because the general order and conditional waiver could be used to regulate various eligible wine, beverage, and food processing facilities throughout the North Coast region, the evaluation of the environmental factors did not address a specific site. Rather, the mitigated negative declarations described how discharges of wastewater from wine, beverage, and food processors could pose a risk to water quality and the environment, and how the conditions of the general order and conditional waiver were designed to ensure that these discharges would be mitigated to less than significant environmental impacts. The mitigated negative declarations were noticed for a 30-day public comment period and posted to the Regional Water Board website. Copies of the mitigated negative declarations were distributed to the State Clearinghouse for circulation and review and provided to the 10 county clerks in the North Coast region for posting. I'd like now to discuss the public outreach actions taken by your staff in developing the general order, conditional waiver, and mitigated negative declarations. Development of the general order and the conditional waiver began in 2014. In the early stages, Regional Water Board staff reached out to interested parties to notify them of the development process and to request their subscription to the wine, beverage, and food processor email list for the purpose of receiving updates on the development process. Staff contacted all of the 200-plus known permitted and unpermitted processing facilities in our region that are currently discharging to land. Staff contacted 16 industry affiliation groups, both local ones such as the West Sonoma Coast Vintners and statewide or national groups such as the California Sustainable Wine Growing Alliance, the California League of Food Processors, and the Wine Institute. Various county departments were contacted, including agricultural departments, planning and building departments, environmental health and community development departments. Additionally, the seven resource and conservation districts in our region were contacted and the five UC cooperative extension offices. A draft general order and conditional waiver were released for public comment in July of 2014. During the 45-day public comment period, a workshop was held in Santa Rosa to present the draft permits and take comments from the public. An update to the board was also given during this comment period. A total of 14 comment letters were received during the initial public comment period in 2014. Rather than respond in writing to the comments, Regional Water Board staff began meeting with industry representatives to discuss specific issues with the permits and work together on making appropriate revisions. Regional Water Board staff met with the wine industry representatives a total of 6 times over an 8-month period. During this 8-month period, the 2 mitigated negative declarations were also developed. The revised general order, revised conditional order, and the mitigated negative declarations were circulated for a second public comment period in October of 2015. Excuse me. The general order, conditional waiver, and mitigated negative declarations were open for public comment for 30 days in 2015. Staff received timely comments on the general order and from 2 interested parties, the Wine Institute and Brelgian Race Consulting Engineers. Brelgian Race Consulting Engineers commented on behalf of their client, Sonoma West Holdings. The key issues addressed in the comment letters are listed here. I will discuss some of these issues in the subsequent slides. No other comments were received during the public comment period, and no comments were received on the conditional waiver or the mitigated negative declarations. Staff's response to comments is included in the agenda item package. Regional Water Board staff met with wine industry representatives to discuss some of the Wine Institute's comments and requested modifications to the general order twice prior to the hearing today. I will now discuss some of the key comments received and the staff's response to those comments. A general comment by both the Wine Institute and Brelgian Race Consulting Engineers was the need to clarify both eligibility of the conditional waiver and the applicable requirements of the general order for specific types of treatment and disposal systems. In response to this comment, staff revised language of the general order to provide clarity to the order's requirements. Staff also developed and included in the response to comments document a flowchart and reference guide to aid dischargers in determining conditional waiver eligibility and identifying applicable requirements for specific types of treatment and disposal systems under the general order. Modified versions of the flowchart and the reference guide have been included in this presentation. The Wine Institute recommended that the 60 milligram per liter effluent limit for sodium either be removed from the general order or replaced with an alternative limit of 115 milligrams per liter. They commented that the 60 milligram per liter limit was unreasonably restrictive and did not take into consideration the diluting effect of rain on the percolating wastewater or the diluting effect of blending the percolated wastewater with groundwater. The Wine Institute proposed that the effluent limit be removed from the general order or alternatively the agricultural-based sodium standard of 115 milligrams per liter be used as the effluent limit. Staff's response to the Wine Institute explained that the effluent limit for sodium was based on a U.S. EPA drinking water advisory and was intended to be protective of the municipal and domestic drinking water source beneficial use of groundwater and the Basin Plan groundwater quality objective for taste and odor. The alternative effluent limit of 115 milligrams per liter, while possibly being protective of the groundwater agricultural source beneficial use, was not protective of the municipal and domestic supply beneficial use set forth in the Basin Plan. Both the Wine Institute and Brelgian Race Consulting Engineers commented on the need and cost associated with groundwater monitoring. They questioned why groundwater monitoring was required for small processing facilities that use septic tank leach field systems to treat and dispose processed wastewater and proposed the elimination of groundwater monitoring for dischargers using septic tank systems with pretreatment. In response, staff explained that processing facilities covered by the conditional waiver, those generating a smaller volume of waste were not required to conduct groundwater monitoring. Only the larger volume waste facilities, the ones covered by the general order, were required to do the groundwater monitoring. Staff discussed how dischargers covered by the general order that use septic tank systems with or without pretreatment relied on the soil matrix of the disposal area to treat wastewater to a level protective of groundwater. The wastewater being discharged to these land treatment systems is either untreated or partially treated. Groundwater monitoring was required to demonstrate that these types of discharge were not causing an exceedance of the general order's groundwater limitations. The Wine Institute expressed concern in the cost of preparing and submitting self-monitoring reports on a quarterly basis. They requested that the reporting frequency be changed to semi-annually. We agreed with the Wine Institute's proposal and changed the reporting frequency of the general monitoring reporting program from quarterly to semi-annually. In summary, the new general order and conditional waiver will result in an increased protection of groundwater and its beneficial uses. The protection will be accomplished through the tiered regulation of discharges of processed waste to land via an expanded and streamlined permitting process. The process will allow for the efficient and consistent regulation of wine, beverage, and food processing waste discharges. It will provide a regulatory mechanism to address discharges from the 300-plus unpermitted processing facilities, including those from smaller volume waste-generating facilities. Protection will also be accomplished through the recognition and assessment of nutrients and salinity constituents. Dischargers covered by the general order are required to meet water quality-based effluent limits, apply nutrients at agronomic rates, or meet the basin plan water quality objectives for groundwater. General order enrollees are additionally required to monitor effluent for groundwater for TDS and to report on the annual chemical usage of that facility. Protection will be confirmed through the general order's requirement to monitor groundwater for larger volume agronomic rate application dischargers and land treatment system dischargers. Groundwater monitoring results will demonstrate how the requirements of the general order are protective of groundwater's beneficial uses. Staff recommends adoption of Order R1-2016-002, General Waste Discharge Requirements, and Order Number R1-2016-0003, Conditional Waiver of Waste Discharge Requirements for Discharges of Wine, Beverage, and Food Processor Waste to Land, and the associated mitigated negative declarations. This concludes my presentation, and at this time, I'm available for any questions you may have.
Board members, Board Member Minton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your presentation, Rachel. With regard to the comment about sodium effluent limits, I understood in your presentation and in the written response to comments document the rationale behind municipal versus agricultural supply as a basis for the limit. But I didn't get the answer to the part of the question that was about dilution. Okay. So I'm wondering if you can elaborate on that.
Yeah, we recognize that that could be a potential way of achieving groundwater limitations or meeting groundwater limitations, but we thought that that would be more appropriately addressed with individual waste discharge requirements where we could gather more information on the discharge, the soil type, that type of information. This was supposed to be a general permit that would allow streamlined permitting for processors. It was sort of incentivized rather than taking a longer period for individual. We thought it would be better addressed with individual waste discharge requirements. I hope that
okay,
helps.
That's clear. Thank you.
Yes, Board Member Hamm.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the presentation. A couple questions regarding in the details of the monitoring and reporting program in groundwater. In a couple of the tables for specifically for groundwater monitoring, you list your parameters as depth to groundwater and groundwater elevation. I'm wondering, they seem redundant. For you're specifying to the hundredth of a foot for groundwater elevation monitoring, but only a tenth of a foot for depth to groundwater. So it seems that you could strike depth to groundwater because groundwater elevation at a hundredth of a foot is more precise and gives you the same information. Just a general comment there. Also, the monitoring frequency, about quarterly monitoring for elevation or depth to groundwater. I'm wondering what this is really going to tell you. Just a quarterly report of what the groundwater elevation is, it seems like it would be more informative if the monitoring was done in timing with land application. We would really get to see what a response might be if that's truly what the question is, if that's why we're monitoring elevation to begin with. Potentially even continuous monitoring, I know that you could use a very low cost data logger that could give you a continuous record of a groundwater hydrograph. That would be far more informative than just a spot elevation would be. That may not be something, I think that would maybe behoove the discharger, that could be far more telling and give you better information than just what a spot measurement would. Maybe not necessarily a requirement, but maybe something that you could recommend. But I'm still questioning just the frequency of what a quarterly monitoring spot elevation would give you.
We had the quarterly monitoring of depths of groundwater, mainly to so that we could figure out gradient on the flow and what confirming the up gradient, down gradient. That was the elevation monitoring of the groundwater direction. So we would recognize the up gradient monitoring well. And it was just standard language that we've included in most of our monitoring reports, but okay. We can definitely change it.
You're going to have to know if you're requiring, was it three up gradient well or one up gradient and two down gradient wells, you would seem to have that information before you site the wells anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. So that may be something to think through and to work with the dischargers on that. There's also, I know we spoke about this in our briefing, but I didn't see language about using existing wells. It specifies you have to install new wells. But okay. That may be an important thing here if we have an existing well, an approved existing well, like staff approved, because if you're going to be doing sampling, you want to make sure that clearly the well's been, a proper well to collect the information that you need.
Yeah, so definitely.
I see our technical expert, Charles, is here.
Hi, Charles Reed, staff at the board here. Let me try to address that. I think your point is well taken. I think more data is always better. The requirements in the order are minimum requirements. If the discharger thinks it behooves them to collect more information to give a better indication of what groundwater level changes are, they're certainly welcome to do that. I think we wanted to set minimum requirements, as we usually do in these orders.
I appreciate that. I'm curious what a quarterly elevation measurement, what you'll learn from that. What does that tell you? I guess if that just maybe to confirm flow direction and gradient, if that's really what you're going to get from it, that's really all you're going to get from it.
Yeah, I think I would echo Rachel's response. It's kind of standard language. It's really trying to get a broad picture of groundwater elevation at the point of discharge over the course of the year. And I think you're right. I think more information specific to the time of discharge probably tells us more about the potential impact to groundwater quality.
Yeah, and I don't want to derail the process here, and I understand the intent. And I guess I would just encourage you to work with the dischargers to maybe look at something that's for very low cost could give you far more information that would be useful to help answer the questions that you're going after.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So I have a question to staff. Do you have the latitude in the current language to do those suggestions?
I think Matt has the ability to change monitoring reporting programs or update them.
That's right. I mean, I certainly have that authority to modify the monitoring reporting program after board adoption. And we can certainly go that route, or after we finish, public comments, we could take a short recess and staff could consider some revised language.
I almost would prefer the latter. And then my next question on the very first item, Board Member Hale spoke, he made a suggestion on the groundwater. I believe that would either have to be board motion or incorporated in a revised staff report to be valid. And so that would be something else I'd throw into the brief recess to get a response because it made sense to me. All right, we'll call on Board Member Norn.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you, Rachel, for a presentation. Couple things. So there's a lot of numbers that got thrown out here because there's a lot of facilities that are being covered here. Can you just walk me through briefly 320 facilities? How many do you foresee then in the because it sounds like you've had a broad outreach here. to, it sounds like, almost all these facilities. How do you see them cutting out then here, Rachel, versus a waiver versus general permit?
We believe that, so the 300 limit was, or the 300 number came from a winery database that we've been keeping in-house. We're not sure exactly how correct that is, because I think sometimes they change their names and they buy each other out, so it might be a little, might duplicate. But we expect most of those wineries in that database were covered under the deferred waiver, so they had received that letter saying, please come back to us once we have our board adopt a conditional waiver. And so that would probably be about 70% to 80% we expect to be covered by the conditional waiver. We expect the remaining to possibly be eligible for coverage under the general order, but we always reserve the right for the individual WDRs too, that we can use those. And we, when we were looking at these numbers and relying on our representative who's been out in the field with most of the wine and beverage food processors, Rhonda Raymond, we expect that the subsurface septic tank and spreading basin type facilities, there's probably only going to be about 10 of them that are enrolled under the general order. So probably maybe 10 facilities at the maximum will be required to do that individual groundwater monitoring. And to get back to what Jeff, Mr. Hale said, we have met with one of the winery's representatives during the process of developing these permits, and we discussed the use of an existing monitoring well that was put in as a cleanup action. I believe it was an underground storage tank site, and we said that we were more than open to using that as the upgradient well. So we had discussed it with them, and yeah, we should maybe change the language so it reflects that.
Yeah,
we hadn't intended it to be that way, but
sure. Yeah. No, just to be able to have that latitude, I think, is really important, because particularly for the smaller folks, that this, I mean, that's no small cost to put a well in.
Yeah.
And we're looking at minimum of three.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Can I ask too, along those lines, do we, because these are many of these, if not all of these, are existing facilities.
Yes.
How many facilities out here now have a monitoring well network and data that we, that has been then looked at and to been reviewed as part of this permit process?
We don't have any out there for actually, I'm sorry, individual waste discharge requirements. There might be some out there.
Okay.
We have some data that was collected from on-site septic systems, but so maybe a winery had a domestic system that we covered with a permit. It just was above the flow threshold that the county would cover, so we had them, and we typically have them put in monitoring wells to confirm that it's not impacting groundwater, and we were showing some nutrient concentration in groundwater in the upgradient well, and they were placed like in a vineyard location. So we have,
I think data, yeah, and I think data is going to be really important here too, because these are existing facilities. To then go in and look at water quality on existing facilities that have been here sometimes for decades, and going through a practice, so using groundwater data without having, in essence, a pre-project groundwater condition that's established, it can be very difficult to then parse out and think, okay, well, what then is the effect here?
Right.
So like on landfills, which I'm very familiar with, you know, typically there's an interwell or interwell confidence interval that's established with an upgradient well that establishes background water quality condition, and then it's compared against that over time. Was there any statistics in here at all considered within the development of groundwater monitoring?
No, we just didn't really have any data to even look at. So,
and this waiver is a 5-year waiver, right? So, I mean, data coming in and data starting to inform then what water quality is out here from these types of facilities, large and small, I think is going to be useful. At the same time, salinity, and I think the 60 milligrams per liter versus 115, I recognize the fact that we regulate to all beneficial uses. And as that goes then, also, I think this board has been strongly supportive of anti-degradation and groundwater basins in this county. I'm interested in data and what kind of data is collected here. So my request would be that if this moves forward and these are adopted, Rachel, I'd like to see some data that then gets kind of fed back here into a loop and not wait out 5 years. There's going to be data coming in. That data, it should be a fair number of facilities to indicate what groundwater conditions are existing out here. And what you're seeing. And I think it'd be very beneficial for everybody to better understand that.
Great. I agree.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. I just wanted to first compliment you on the extraordinary effort of prior to writing written responses, you went out and met with the parties and both clarified and took that into account in your regulations, and that's exemplary. We have here a particular set of facts. Of course, if we had one where you had intervening other groups of the public or environmental groups, they'd have to get the same service. But as far as I know, we've always done a pretty good job of that. I'm just reminding on it. And then I have a procedural matter for future use of that process that I'll discuss later on. And but I did want to thank you. I think we got down to a narrow set of issues, and I think we did because of your hard work, and I think you're still upholding the regulatory side. So great job on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Rachel. Very, very thorough and thoughtful presentation. A couple of things I wanted to raise, and it follows up on Board Member Hale and Noren's comments dealing with both groundwater and the 60 versus 115 milligrams per liter. As I mentioned to you in our briefing, you know, it seems like the orders are focusing on volume thresholds, gallons per day, but we never talk about spatial thresholds, gallons per acre, in terms of dispersing across the landscape. And we use the guidance of agronomic rates, but agronomic rates are not constant, winter versus summer, perennial versus annual plant species, and we know that transpiration is going to change over the course of a calendar year. Walk me through the process of adding those components with, you know, what we're trying to do is we're trying to protect groundwater, right? We know there are different soil types. We know there may be proximity to domestic and agricultural wells. We know there may be proximity to other surface waters. How when you're out there evaluating the permit, how are you going to bring all this together so that it's a cohesive permit that looks at changes of season, changes of soils, and the like?
Thank you. I think we were hoping to maybe get at that more detailed aspect maybe in the next go around, because this is sort of a phased approach at regulating these types of food processing dischargers. Our previous wine order had them only look at a few constituents of concern, which weren't really, they were more nuisance conditions, BOD limit and total suspended solids. We didn't have a lot of information on nutrients. We didn't have them look at nutrients at all or sodium or chloride or any of the salts. So we recognize that the nutrient management plan that we request is probably very basic, just asking for the agronomic rate. But we thought it was a good first step, and if we, it would be hard to get too much more. And we're hoping that in the 5 years that we'll be coming back to you with the waiver as we get more information on these types of dischargers, on their potential impact, both effluent monitoring and groundwater monitoring. And we just didn't have any data to go off of for our specific regional water board.
And I'm not advocating more regulations or more costs. I'm advocating protection for the applicants and for the public. And so I think we need to force ourselves to continually think and evolve of how it's not just how much we are disposing, it's how we're disposing of it. Right. And I think that's an important consideration. So I just wanted to use a dais to get that comment out there.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for all your work.
Thank you. We had considered that too when we were adopting the condition or putting the conditional waiver together.
All right. Any other comments? Well, thank you for your presentation. I wanted all the industry representatives to stand, if you could. And what I want, if you're planning to testify, and what I'm getting at, have you prearranged how you're going to allocate your 20 minutes? And if not, I'll give you a brief recess to allocate that. Or we have the choice of calling up, and if time runs up, or I can divide it by the number of people. So how many people are we talking about want to testify on behalf of the industry? Okay, two. So you both need 10 minutes. Is that a good?
I was expecting three, and I'm not even sure I'll hit that.
So. Okay. Well, we're not forcing you to go into lengthy testimony. Take my word for that. But what we'll do is we'll put 10 on the clock for each of you, and I want to make sure there's no objections to that procedure. Okay, hearing none, that's entered in the record, and we'll call on the industry representatives. Please identify yourself and that you've been sworn.
Good morning. My name is Tim Schmelzer. I'm Director of Legislative and Regulatory Affairs for Wine Institute, and I have been sworn in. First off, we're here to support adoption of the general order today. We really very much appreciate the open process and the back and forth that we've been able to experience with staff and making sure that we have an order here that's both protective of groundwater and something that we think is going to encourage people to apply for the general order. I think it's we're generally in favor of the concept of people getting coverage under a general order rather than having to go through the individual WDR process. So it was really important that we get this right. We're very aware there's a lot of wineries out there that need coverage. So, you know, we take this very seriously. So anyway, much compliment to the staff for the hard work there. And we provided them with a mountain of comments to which they were very responsive to. So that's very much appreciative. Briefly want to touch upon the groundwater monitoring. I'm not exactly sure where we were going in that conversation, so I'm not sure I can really respond on the fly to that. So I look forward to some discussion there. One thing I do want to mention is that we are appreciative that it's at least an option for some wineries that are in the groundwater monitoring program to obtain coverage through a regional monitoring plan, which has yet to be developed. And just wanted to state that we're happy for that to be an option and absolutely stand ready to assist staff in the development of that program. So finally, the thing that you probably won't be surprised I want to focus on is sodium. As you're aware, in the comments we provided, we had recommended either that we go into sort of a data gathering but not regulatory approach with monitoring for sodium, or that we use this agronomic rate of 115 milligrams per liter that was recommended through scientific papers that we provided to staff. Our main concern here really is a little bit of the fear of the unknown. Sodium is not something that most wineries monitor for right now, and our anecdotal evidence suggests it may be a difficult standard. The standard that staff chose is an advisory standard concerning aesthetics. Basically, you know, when is it possible to taste the sodium in the water? And I just think it would be a real shame if people weren't able to obtain coverage under the general order due to that particular standard. I would strongly recommend that we gather data on this. We absolutely believe it should be monitored for and see if we have an issue there. At a minimum, we would recommend that the data that is monitored here on sodium be averaged for quarterly increments, and we can decide whether we made it on that standard as opposed to a single grab potentially kicking a winery into an individual WDR. Again, I want to emphasize, you know, the 60 isn't a health standard. This is an aesthetic advisory standard. So I just really think it would be a shame if that ended up producing a negative outcome here. And I wasn't joking. I really don't have a lot more to say than that. I really want to appreciate very much all the work that's been done here and look forward to your comments in response to our request on sodium there.
Right. And you filled out a 3-minute earlier?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I'm going to count this as your 3-minute.
Okay.
Okay.
Did I make it?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions, comments? Okay. Robert Chobale?
Krobak. Robert Krobak, Kennedy Jenks Consultants. Thank you, Chair. Board members and staff. I'm here to talk a little bit about, in my consulting role within the industry, I work a lot with the food and beverage industry and the wine industry, and I'm here to talk a little bit on the sodium issue to add to some of the comments that Tim Schmelzer provided. And again, I just want to, you know, we're totally supportive of the monitoring side of this because there is a lot of unknown here. We have some anecdotal information based on review of a limited data set that could, conceivably it could be as many as 40% of a small number of wineries that we looked at would have initial review would not meet this limit, which would then kick them into the need to go to an individual WDR. If I translate that to the numbers that could impact based on staff's estimate, it could be as many as 50 to 100 facilities that would then be kicked into the individual WDR. So I would like the board to consider a few things here. One is, sodium is a naturally occurring in groundwater, and concentrations are highly variable. We suggest an annual average rather than a grab sample on a monthly average basis. An annual average, given that this is a aesthetic and a taste threshold issue, it's not a health direct health issue. Therefore, it's not an acute issue, so an annual average is would be much more appropriate in our estimation. The taste test threshold that was used and the background data on those studies that were referenced indicated that this taste varied upon individual, just as any you would expect in that subjective analysis, anywhere from 30 to 460 milligrams per liter before somebody could actually detect a salty value. And it depends on the other constituents that are in the water. And I would like to paraphrase here. It said that drinking water in the 30 to 60 milligram per liter range is unlikely to be perceived as salty by most individuals. So, again, this is a threshold number that we should consider. Back in 1998, the EPA evaluated sodium in contaminant candidate list, and they made a determination then that it should not be regulated. And so they're still, looking at the data, collecting the data, figuring out how does this fit in. And just one last comment, another threshold number that has been used, the World Health Organization uses 200 as the taste number. So with that in mind, the concept that is at least discussed about getting groundwater data and so forth, maybe a monitoring approach could be very helpful here, certainly moving to an annual average given what we're talking about, and that's the basis of my comments.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Can I ask you a question, sir?
Well, certainly.
So from your experience then, Robert, sodium in this instance, is this from a caustics type of thing because we're using trisodium phosphate and sodium metabisulfite sulfate and stuff like that?
That's a very good question. As part of any food processing and wine, you often need cleaning and sanitation. And
absolutely.
Often they are sodium-based compounds,
yes.
Although there are options there. You can go to potassium-based. But that is exactly part of the issue. And then certainly if there is any hardness in groundwater, an often approach that's taken is using sodium cation exchange softeners, which results in a sodium brine.
Yes.
So all of those factor into what is the source of it. I don't have the information from that. I mentioned the data set that I don't know exactly why. The other thing that happens oftentimes is you may have, say you have a pond treatment system. You may get evapoconcentration in the pond just from that perspective and result in potentially exceeding that 60 milligram per liter threshold. And I don't believe that, that the 60 needs to be the effluent value because you do have the ability to demonstrate through the anti-degradation analysis, if you go that route, to document that with rainfall, with the way it's applied on the basis of pounds per acre or however you look at that, that you could end up with still being protective of groundwater but exceed 60 milligrams per liter.
Well, a couple things strike me is that my mom and dad have a water well out in Bene Valley, and it's out in the Sonoma Volcanics. And man, when I drink that well now, that well water now, it's salty to me. And
No surprise.
I have a well in Sebastopol, and it's not like that at all. Formation dependent sodium concentration is certainly here. As I said before, data would be really helpful here. Not only data in an aggregate sense, but also data from a specific sense where we have an upgradient well and establishing some type of background concentration on these facilities. I absolutely agree with Board Member Giusti. I think agronomic rate, where, when, how, over what type of area this is being applied is key. I think you lose a little bit of flexibility with a septic system versus a surface applied system here. And nonetheless, though, I believe that information here would be very valuable. Annual averaging, I think, could be realistic. I think that's not a big deal here. I think some information is needed. So let me ask you, just permission to speak freely, sir. What are you suggesting? And there was at least a comment before about a regional monitoring plan. I'm just talking out loud for a minute about, you know, what could we do here in a shorter term, not wait 5 years. Part of the issue, I think, that was identified by staff is that, you know, this is the first cut. I think that the first five-year term was meant to develop some of this information. I think in the interest of expediency, for Sonoma County and for the North Coast, we have very high-quality groundwater here, and we're very protective of that. I think that's your interest, that's our interest, and the interest of the state of California here. I'm interested in what could be proposed then in a short term to gather information at least immediately. And then also in the development of a nutrient management plan here, it seems to me that we could increase the specificity of the type of question that Board Member Giusti raised, which I think is very germane when we're talking about the application of wastewater. I'm just talking out loud, what could we do here in the short term, not wait 5 years, and to get data here that could inform this decision while we could be very protective of groundwater here? Just a question.
Sure.
You're free to respond, sir.
Yeah, I will answer both of those questions, or at least there were at least two there. On the recommendation on what I would do or suggest as a possibility for short term, get the data, evaluate it, figure out where we are, is I would continue with the outreach that has been happening and see what we can gather as industry representatives. I have represented in the past the Wine Institute and the League of Food Processors. We may be able to get our information provided that would help define this a little better, because I frankly was alarmed when I saw 5 out of 12 that I had data on, we exceeded 60 milligrams per liter. That to me was a flag. Which is why we suggested that would be worth discussing. So I would continue with the outreach, see what data we can provide. Can we then move quickly to establish something going forward on that? So that's how I would propose thinking about how we might deal with that issue. As far as the facility nutrient management plans, often when you do those plans, you do look at, it's not just an agronomic rate for the year, you look at how and when you would do it. So there is a balance in terms of looking at when the crop season is and so forth and what crops you are growing. So there is more information typically than just sort of a threshold. And so related to that, again, with nutrients, it's not an immediate acute issue. It is looking at a broader and more on an annual or when the crop needs the nutrients. So I think some detail, if the facility nutrient management plan is provided, oftentimes that information is included.
Well,
to get to your some of your questions, Member Giusti.
Yeah, and I think that's right. And I believe also the key word in the nutrient management plan is management, because you know we do have the ability, or facilities have the ability to manage this water over time and space, right? It's not set to be concentrated necessarily unless there's fixed infrastructure, and a septic system may be a part of that that could be a little bit problematic.
That's correct.
But a surface application, or timing-wise, or vegetation type, could be very important within that equation.
That's correct.
Okay.
Mr.
Thank
Chair.
You very much.
And Board Member Norton, just to be clear, are you recommending staff consider that in the laundry list, or are you reserving the right for a motion, or are you commenting on where we need to go?
Yes. I'll make a statement. I want to be highly protective of groundwater in Region 1, the bottom line. The thing is, it strikes me that we do have some spatial variability from just geologic formation out here with sodium. I'm aware of that. I've experienced that myself. I'm interested in the variables that we could turn the dial on here, one of them being the development of the nutrient management for where these facilities are going to have to monitor for sodium. I think that would be highly beneficial for us to have not just a baseline nutrient management plan, but specifically consider that sodium concentration, timing, where, when, and how it's applied. I think also groundwater data and expedient groundwater data information set would be very helpful here, whether it be something that's already out there on facilities that are being monitored now or facilities that will be monitored in the near future. And then I would like to not hold up the adoption. I think this permit, I think we have a very small issue here, and I think that we should move forward but possibly condition the permit upon adoption.
Okay.
Thank you. you know, in my world, words matter, and I have to admit, I was really taken back that both of you referred to this as an aesthetic issue when we're talking about protecting the taste of groundwater. That word hits me as being dismissive and cavalier. It did not resonate well with me to think of this as only an aesthetic problem. I do agree with the need to have better data. I do agree with the need to continue an open dialogue. I'm open to what Board Member Noren said of trying to come up with a way that we can get better data as participants go through and analyze this particular parameter. But this is not an aesthetic issue, gentlemen. This is a public health issue and a private property issue, in my opinion. So just wanted to share that with you.
I agree with the board members that on the sodium issue that there isn't data, maybe significant in a data. And since this is a phased approach, that we kind of do something to collect that data and then use the adaptive management philosophy and go back and hopefully in a shorter time period than the 5 years. So I'm not exactly sure how we do that. But to actually go out and do that data gathering and the monitoring and decide if the 115 is the right number, maybe it is excessive, but I'd rather have the data than just pick a number out of the air right now. But I just don't know how to approach of how to do that within that 5-year period.
Well, it seems that we're steering or heading toward coming up with the ability to define a site-specific sodium criteria, which would require some site-specific data gathering to do that, which is currently not in place in this permit. So can we begin that concurrently with this program? It seems that we have support, and I'm very thankful, Rachel, for the outreach. Where did you go, Rachel? There you are. I mean, the outreach that you did and the amount of folks that you had to talk to and the response that you received, you're fine there. It's okay. You know, it speaks volumes of, you know, that there's a general consensus that this is a good thing that we're doing. We're trying to do good. The objectives are pretty clear. We're just really trying to finesse the details. But the devil is in the details in some of these. And when you have an order or a permit, if you go away and staff that worked on this go away and we have to live by the words that are in this, then we're stuck with some pretty rigorous boundaries on here. So right now we all understand the intent that we're talking about, but we need to codify it in what we have here. So what I'd like to do is, you know, Chairman Corbett had suggested potentially, you know, recessing to finesse some language. I recommend that we try to do that just to kind of get us to where we want to go. I don't think there's a big gap to bridge with this, but I would like to see us try to make that effort before moving forward with any type of recommendation for adoption.
Okay. I'll give a very brief rebuttal to staff, 2 minutes, if you want to, on the industry, and I'll give industry 2 minutes back if you want on that. And then I will recess for 5 minutes. I do think and would recommend that Board Member Noren talk to staff, because I still had trouble translating his comments to action. Yeah, when we pass this, it's got to be understandable to a human being. And so,
yeah, I'm not sure staff knows exactly what you're after either, but we'll find out soon. Well, it's possible we can consider the sodium objective, maybe a caveat that you have to meet the 60 unless site-specific conditions make that impossible. The gentleman from the consultant said, suggested maybe 40% of the wineries that he saw would not perhaps comply. We haven't seen that data, and we don't know if they are not maybe able to comply because of controllable factors, or maybe they're uncontrollable factors. And a lot of times, salt can be increased through practices in a winery or a beverage or food processor. So we think if it's controllable, that should be controlled. If it indeed is uncontrollable, for instance, you have high natural background sodium, maybe that can be a consideration.
Okay, thank you. Does the industry want to respond to that? Okay. And then the record should reflect there are no public cards. I want to make sure I wasn't trying to be insulting to Board Member Noren. I actually liked his idea. I thought it was very thoughtful. The issue is, was that a future perspective or to amend this permit? That's what was not clear to me. And so you might want to clarify that to staff, and they'll give fair consideration to your comments on the five-minute break and may or may not agree. Is that fair enough?
Can I make a recommendation?
Sure.
Which is that we take a five-minute break, but staff's going to need more than 5 minutes to come back with a proposal. So my suggestion is that we end this hearing, take up the next informational item from our colleagues from NOAA Fisheries, and then come reopen the hearing once staff has had 20-30 minutes to come up with a proposal.
Yeah, I think, and legal can correct me, but we want to continue the hearing if there is a substantial change in the language that we can get input.
Yeah, I think that staff needs additional time, so we can close it and then reopen it. That would be appropriate.
Okay, so it would be closed with a reopener?
Right.
Okay. I'm going to then close the public hearing on this with the understanding it can be and will be reopened after we get clarifying language. And with that, we'll take a five-minute break, and then we have NOAA Fisheries. I'm going to call. Is staff ready?
Yes.
And we have the materials?
Yes.
Okay. And have they been distributed to the industry? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And then did they get distributed to us while I was looking at something else? Yes. Okay. Thank you. Well, then we're set to proceed. And why don't you make a very brief presentation?
John, can you formally reopen the hearing? Mr. Chairman, can you formally reopen the hearing?
Okay. I will formally reopen the hearing. On agenda item number 3, in just 1 second, I'll read. Public hearing to consider adoption of order number R1-2016-0002, general waste discharge requirements. WDRs in order number R1-2016-0003, conditional waiver of WDRs for wine, beverage, and food processing, waste to land, and associated mitigated negative declarations.
So we've done some sausage making in the back, and hopefully we've addressed both some of the concerns that the industry's had and some of your concerns. We have one change to the order, the WDR, and we have a number of changes to the monitoring reporting program. Looks like the MRP is up first, so I think we'll start there. I'll turn it over to Rachel for the details.
Hey. Is this on? Yeah, okay. So we went to the monitoring reporting program and changed the language for the monitoring well construction to reflect that an existing monitoring well could be used. We still are requesting that we have design information on it so that we will know where it's screened and the lithology that it's constructed in. We changed it by eliminating being called monitoring well construction so that it could cover the ones that are already constructed. We asked that the existing wells, information on the existing wells, if they were to be used, that they would be included with the application process or the technical information form. Let's see. We changed language so that we weren't referencing installed all the times so we could recognize existing.
To the next red underlined text.
To get at Mr. Hale's question about the depth to groundwater and the groundwater elevation, we've changed the units so that they are consistent. We're put it to 0.1 feet, but we kept both parameters in there because we recognize that typically when you're either trying to figure out the elevation, you know the depth to the groundwater, or you know, vice versa. So we thought that we would be okay to get both information reported to us.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm not so concerned about that. They're one services the other. It's the same measurement that you make, but it was the difference in precision of measurement that was throwing me off. So this is fine.
Yeah, I think it was a typo, but then it brought it to our attention, and so we changed it from 0.01 to 0.1 because we thought 0.1 would actually give us the information we needed, and so we didn't need to be more restrictive on it. Let's see. To the next one, Patty. Oh, we changed, we added that the executive officer or the regional water board would both have the ability to approve the regional groundwater monitoring plan that's going to be coming to us if that's what the larger dischargers decide to do, the ones that would be confirming agronomic rate is protective of groundwater. Next one. Oh, is that it? Okay, so that was the changes that we made to the monitoring reporting program. And then to the general order, we changed the effluent limit we kept the same effluent limit of the 60. We also went back and looked at our MARSHAC's goal database, which we rely on for water quality objectives, and the ag number was recently changed to 69. So the 115 milligrams per liter has recently been changed to 69, just to give you a heads up, too. The 60 is still what we consider protective of taste and odor. It's actually, I should have told you before, but it's a sliding scale. It was 30 to 60, and we chose 60 as the number when we included that effluent limit. We've changed it to an average quarterly limit so that the discharger has the ability, they'll be monitoring monthly, and they can average that over a quarter and then provide us what that number is. And there's always ability to sample even more than what the monitoring reporting program requires. So they could sample more times during the month to even bring that average down more if they need to. Is that it? I think that might be the changes, all the changes we made. I don't know if that addresses all your concerns.
I just want to add, this is Shin-Rei Lee with Water Board. I just want to address Member Noren's comment about groundwater monitoring. I think that because we have an option for regional monitoring, albeit it's designed to demonstrate the nutrient agronomic ray application is protective of groundwater, the industry is more than welcome to include the salt related monitoring so that we have data to support maybe a request to revisit the sodium limit as well as the current proposed thresholds to put certain wineries under the waiver versus under the order.
I would just also point out Alita Mangelsdorf reminded me and suggested that I mention to you that as part of the City of Santa Rosa's Salt and Nutrient Management Plan, in consultation with us, have developed a groundwater monitoring program throughout the Santa Rosa. So this is limited to the Santa Rosa plan. But it will be including a bunch of additional monitoring that hasn't been done up until now for salts, including sodium. So I think our database, so to speak, is going to be growing with regard to sodium in groundwater and can be used to augment the monitoring under this order.
Matt, I think that's fine. I think at the same time, I guess I would have a crest out here. What we lack now is data. And that I think that as data comes in at some point appropriate, why don't we put it at 1 year, that we have a report back from staff to say this is what we're finding out here. That gives us the opportunity to revisit this if need be. And I think we could be highly protective of a groundwater here at the same time and then get data to inform what is actually going on out here.
Clarify, when we address the costs issue associated with groundwater monitoring, we revised the proposed order to provide more time for the actual groundwater monitoring to be in place, and that's about like 2 years from today. So I think when we have a year worth of data, probably we're talking 3 years from today to bring back some results to report to the board.
Shinrei, let me revise that then. Let me just say that a request would be a standing request when we have data that's reportable and reliable and vetted, including with City of Santa Rosa, that we could come back and look and see what's going on and report back to us. Fair enough?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Mr. Chair, can I ask an adoption, proposed adoption?
Excuse me. I want to make sure the industry had a chance to provide feedback on the changes.
I've had as much time to review as you, but definitely appreciate the changes on the groundwater monitoring and I asked for average quarterly, and I got it, so I pretty much can't complain about that. You did get me excited earlier that there was going to be potentially a chance on an individual basis if we were having issues, due to high background levels or something, that might be able to get addressed. So in as much as I'm allowed to be disappointed, I'm a little disappointed we didn't see that come through.
And I don't think that's something that we can't rule out, because there's no reason why we can't see you or somebody back here before us to explain that this really isn't working based on data that have been collected.
I mean, we're in the kind of the same position. I'm looking forward to seeing the data myself.
Yeah.
I would love to hope to hear from folks about that. We nailed this.
And I think you did hear considerable board sentiment supporting a more comprehensive or plan approach. I think when one's developed, that would be favorably received.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that very much.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a point of clarification? Assuming that we've had all comments, there's two separate orders here for adoption, plus there's a mitigated neg deck. Is that correct?
Yes.
Is there a mitigated neg deck for each that we have to do? So do we take them single file?
I would refer that to the attorney that asked for the split vote.
I would recommend a vote for the WDR and the associated mitigated neg deck for that WDR, and then a vote for the conditional waiver and associated mitigated neg deck for that waiver.
Fair enough. Thank you. Mr. Chair, I will give you a motion for the adoption of order number R1-2016-002 with the associated mitigated neg declaration for the general waste discharge requirements for wine, beverage, food processing, waste to land, and associated mitigated neg deck.
Excuse me, can you also clarify if that includes the changes that were just brought forth?
Thank you for that. With the associated changes,
which I assume is an amended staff report, so now part of the total for both motions.
Well, it's the amended order, not as opposed to the staff. It's not a staff report. It's the amended order. Yes.
Do you want me to say it all over again?
Nope.
Okay.
It includes the changes that were most recently presented to us.
The amended order.
Yes, sir.
Correct.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Any further discussion? Okay, all those, please call the roll.
Board Member Minton?
Aye.
Board Member Hale?
Aye.
Board Member Norin?
Aye.
Chairman Corbett?
Aye.
Board Member Gant?
Aye.
Board Member Juicy?
Aye.
All right, Mr. Chair, I will further give you a motion for the adoption of this is a conditional waiver, order number R1-2016-0003, conditional waiver, and the associated mitigating declaration with changes as discussed with staff.
Is there a second?
Second.
Could you please call the roll?
Board Member Minton?
Aye.
Board Member Hale?
Aye.
Board Member Norin?
Aye.
Chairman Corbett?
Aye.
Board Member Gant?
Aye.
Board Member Juicy?
Aye.
Okay. So I think with that, we're through the agenda. So I'm going to adjourn the meeting.
But we do have one other information item.
Item number five.
Well, thank you.
We have
you
our colleagues from Sacramento.
We're calling agenda item number five, update on water rights and fishery management actions in the Russian River.